everybody, Sarah Grillo here. Welcome back to my show. And today, really got a great show. Excited about it personally. I have Taylor Schulte here. He's a financial planner with a podcast called Experiments in Advisor Marketing. Hey, Taylor, what's up? Hey, everyone. This is Sarah. And welcome to my show.
Welcome. Sarah, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Did you like the wild welcome? I told you it was wild, right?
I loved it. The complete opposite of how I open my shows.
So we're going to talk about experiments in financial advisor marketing today. So to some extent, all marketing is an experiment. There's never any guarantee. But there is a certain extent to which with everything that you do in marketing, you should be guessing and checking. You should be looking to see what the results are and assessing, how can I make this better? How can I improve this? But I myself have recently run my own financial advisor, not financial advisor, but my own personal marketing experiment. And I know Taylor runs experiments as well that he's going to talk about. So, Taylor, you had an experiment that you recently started up. What are you doing experimentally today?
So, you know, it just kind of hit me. I was thinking, I've spent the last 5 years doing a lot of stuff online, digital marketing, SEO, you know, all that fun stuff. And it just kind of hit me one day as I was kind of opening up some mail at my house and thinking, you know, when's the last time I got a super high quality piece of content in the mail? Like, think of the best blog post you've ever written and it being sent to somebody, you know, physically via mail. You know, we put these blog posts up all the time and they get published by media outlets and all that good stuff. But it just kind of hit me that, like, I don't ever get any high quality piece of mail these days. And there's less than, it's garbage. You usually throw it away, you recycle it, you shred it up. But, you know, there's less and less mail these days because everyone's so focused online. I thought, you know, what if we kind of, we mimicked a email type funnel where you kind of add value over a series of emails and then you go in for the ask. What if we kind of copied that and we did that with snail mail? And so what I'm doing is I've identified 50 high net worth households here in North County, San Diego, and we're going to be sending them 3 pieces of super high quality content that I'm really proud of physically in the mail. So each week, they're going to get something new from me. I'm not asking anything of them. It's just really valuable content. And then the 4th week, I'm going to kind of go in for the ask and try to get them to schedule just a 15-minute phone call with me if there's a potential fit between, you know, our services and their needs. So,
Is that 4th piece also a snail mail piece, Taylor?
Yep, the 4th piece is a snail mail piece. It'll be, you know, a nice letter from me. It'll outline our process for potential clients, and then it'll drive them towards the very first step, which is scheduling a phone call. So it's that kind of like Gary V jab, 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 punch model. So, you know, add a bunch of value and then go in for the ask.
Yeah, no, I like that. Because really, I think what you're going to see as the result of this experiment is that any kind of marketing can work. Like, I hate dinner seminars, right? I think they're high cost, they're boring, but I think it has a little bit to do with the fact that I'm a little bit of a, like, hyperactive personality. So I myself would never sit through a dinner seminar. Plus I have kids under 5 years old. So I never really get out of the house to get to go and do anything. But I just think that they're garbage, but I know people that have built businesses using dinner seminars. So it just goes to show you that. And I think this will work the way that you're doing it, because I think that you're doing it very correctly. But the only risks to that is I see that if people are on vacation when they get the first 3 and then they just get the 4th one, like if the mail is received out of order, then that would be maybe making it ineffective. And you don't get that. The thing about snail mail is you don't get that feedback to know if somebody opened it. Whereas if I send an email newsletter, for example, this is why people like email marketing, because you get feedback on it. You get to see, like, if I can see that you opened a certain email newsletter of mine, then the next newsletter I can build on that. Like, I can, you know, so we can proceed along, and then I can ask for the close the 4th time, and I know it's the 4th time for real. Whereas if you're sending this on snail mail, you don't know when they receive that 4th one. You have no guarantee that that's the 4th time they're seeing you or the first time, right?
Yeah, no, you make a couple of really valid points. I mean, yeah, I don't know if people are on vacation or not. Summer is probably not the best time to be running this experiment, but you know, it just, it is what it is. We had a summer intern kind of help drive this whole thing. So that is a risk. I don't know, you know, how many people are going to open it, but you know, I think if you send it to enough people, you should be able to really, now I'm only doing 50 because the other hard part about this whole thing is it's really expensive, you know, unlike an email where you can just blast it out to your email group. You know, I have to physically print these things. I want them to look really nice. I don't want someone to just shred it up and throw it in the trash. So I want them to look nice and professional. So that costs money to print. And then postage isn't cheap these days either. So, and then it's a lot of physical time. We're going to handwrite people's names and addresses and put physical stamps on the envelopes. And like, we're going to make it look legit, because I want to see real results here. And maybe I'll fall flat on my face here. But, you know, I guess it all started because I made this joke, like, advisors try to do everything. They want a blog, they want a podcast, they want to use social media. And I just made this joke on my podcast and said, look, if you want to write high quality, if you want to hand write high quality content and send it out via snail mail, and you're consistent with it, and you're good at it, and you enjoy doing it, I have no doubt that you'd be successful with it. So, I'm going to put that to the test. I mean, I'm not, if this is
Let me know. Do a podcast update.
If this was my full-time like marketing activity and I was throwing all my money towards this project, I have no doubt I'd be successful. So this is just a mini test, but I just want to encourage advisors to think outside the box. And, you know, just because Sarah has a podcast doesn't mean you have to go start a podcast. So what are you good at? What do you really enjoy doing? And just do that one thing and do it really, really well.
Yeah. Don't copy anybody. Right.
Yeah. Right.
So, although I do advocate for slightly like looking at things, like knowing things that other people are doing that make them successful, because you can always learn, I think, from other people and apply it your own way. So yeah, you know what I want to tell you, Taylor? I actually did something like that. I thought out of the box, where I was once in this like telemarketing role. And so I'm calling these people, calling, people aren't responding. And I'm emailing and social media and the whole thing. And I'm like, wait a second. Why don't I send a fax? Because nobody sends, and then everyone was like, Sarah, you're crazy. No one sends faxes anymore. And I agree. There are very few companies that will actually hold out that they have a fax line anymore. But I sent a bunch of faxes, and I actually got a lot of responses, because it was like the fax line is so seldomly used for this kind of a thing that people did not have their guards up. So they actually received the faxes in and didn't pivot and like discard them to the trash can. Isn't that funny?
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. And that's kind of how I view, you know, snail mail marketing right now. And kind of the next thing on the horizon, I'm going to start thinking about, I've put very little thought into it yet, but you know, billboards, it's something that, you know, we haven't really done. We kind of laugh at them, but they stand out, and there's not a lot of people, or at least financial advisors, buying up billboards and advertising there. And so, I don't know, I just like to think of these like weird, quirky ways and things that other people aren't doing, just to see if, hey, maybe there's an opportunity here.
Well, you know that something is only weird and quirky until people start to make money from it, and then everybody wants to do it.
Right. I mean, look at someone like Ken Fisher. We all laugh at those ads that we see all over the place. But, you know, I always, whenever I kind of laugh at something or think it's silly or whatever, it kind of is a signal to me to say, hey, wait a second, pause for a second. This person might be onto something.
Well, they got your attention.
It gets your attention and everybody talks about it. So, yeah, if anything ever gets my attention or I start to scratch my head, or if I even laugh at it, I'm like, wait a second, there's probably an opportunity here.
Right. So I want to tell you about my marketing experiment, okay?
Yeah, let's do it.
So this is something I did yesterday. So I had 4 prospecting meetings. And in my last podcast, I was talking about like shutting up. Like, I think people just need to shut up more and not barf as much. Like, I just, because I had a bunch of experiments, I've had a bunch of things where we got leads in, and then like a bunch of people blew it because they went and they got on the phone and they did the spiel, and it like ruined an awesome like $2 million potentially lead in one case. And I was like, oh, like stop barfing, you know? And so I just have this phrase now where I just think less information, better. And I think it is because I have too many kids. Like, I have 4 kids under 5 years old. And so I operate in this constantly hyperactive state of mind where I have, because I have so many things to do and I have to be that way. But my communications have become very much abbreviated. I would write, if I could do a one word website and have it work, I would do it. Okay. So this is what I did. I did a two sentence experiment. Okay, Taylor, where I said, okay, I have these four prospecting meetings today. I'm going to not speak in any interval longer than two sentences long.
Nice.
So how'd
that work?
Okay, but I'm going to tell you about it, right? So at first I said, okay, this is how I'm going to structure it. The first sentence is going to be a statement, right? And then the second sentence is going to be a question, and then I'm going to shut up.
Okay. And how'd that go?
Okay. So I'm going to go meeting by meeting because I took notes because I knew that we were going to have this podcast and we could talk about it, okay? So the first one was a website meeting, right? So I will tell you that the two-sentence rule made things a little bit hard because at times he would ask me a detailed question. And so, he would be like, he asked me this, right? He goes, so what's your process for making this website? How are you going to create the copy for this website? And I was like, well, there's a branding questionnaire, and then you give me the results back, and then I write the copy, and then you edit it, and then compliance, and then the web, and there was actually no way to answer that in two sentences. So I failed at the experiment. But I guess that's conclusive results. Like, you can't always speak in two sentences when you're asked a direct question. But note that I did not open up the prospecting meeting with a barf. I maintained my two sentence rule in the beginning until it got to the point that he was so interested that he then made me barf on him. Okay.
Okay.
But I did barf on him. Okay. But I'm going to tell you, this is really interesting, Taylor. It was the two sentence rule was the most useful when I was trying to close the deal. Now, this is the point in the transaction when the pressure is the highest. But let me tell you that this was the point when the person seemed to be the most welcoming of the two sentence rule because it made him more responsive. So, for example, he said to me, he was talking and he's like, well, I have three other meetings with your competitors. So instead of being like, well, I'm so much better than them because blah, 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 and barfing, this is what I said, Taylor. I go like this. I go, well, the decision you are making really is if you want your website to be radically different and make a highly memorable first impression. Is that what you want, or are you looking to stick more to the traditional style?
Nice. It's a good question.
Right. See, and let me tell you this. He was like, you know what, Sarah? You made me think about it. I do want something like this. Yeah, I do. I want something like what you just said. And I said, yeah, right. So that's how I do it. Okay, great. So what's the next step? And I just knew he was going to close the deal because then at that point he said, see, I also said in my follow-up question, that was a two-sided, yeah, okay, that's what I do. What's the next step? Two sentences. And then he goes, I'll talk to you next week. See?
Perfect. But it sounds like it was a success.
The two sentence rule was a success. Although, like I said, I did barf at some point and break my own two sentence rule.
Sure.
Now, 11 a.m. So I had an 11 a.m. meeting, right? And so this one, I actually had no idea what the meeting was about because I have a bunch of different products I sell at different price points. And so I wasn't sure like how to position this. So I just go like this. I open up the call and I go, so I know that you mentioned you read a blog of mine or that you've read a lot of my blogs. What would be the number one or two thing that moved you the most in what you read? And then I shut up. And it turns out that he didn't even know about what I did. And so he goes like this. He goes, so what do you do? And I go, well, the main thing I do is I help people set themselves apart by pushing the envelope a little bit. Would that be something you'd want to do? And he said, yeah. Right. So that worked. And I actually ended up closing the transaction.
Cool.
So, and then I had another meeting and I used the shut up technique, the two sentence and then shut up technique in the beginning, but I also had to barf because I was forced to barf because of the way that the deal went. And then I want to tell you something different. Okay, so that's the third prospecting meeting. Now, the fourth experience was actually not even my fourth meeting. Okay. Because the fourth meeting, I don't even know what happened with that. I didn't write notes for it. I can't recall it right here, but I'm going to tell you in lieu of the fourth prospecting meeting, the fourth time I did the experiment was that right after that third meeting, a client called to yell at me. Okay. And so I suppose I'm supposed to pretend that I'm like perfect and that clients never call me up and have anything negative to say, but you know, someone really was a little frustrated. Now, just between you and me, audience, in my opinion, I was not totally at fault here. As with most things, most of these little disputes you have, it was like kind of your fault and kind of the other person's fault. So I think both of us kind of played a role. But let me tell you, this person on the phone was not having that. So here's what happened, right? The client calls me up yelling at me. I shut up. I just shut up. I didn't even bother with the two sentences, Taylor. I just shut up. Mm-hmm. I didn't even try to defend myself. And no, here's what happened. It worked well because the client actually got tired of yelling at me because I allowed him to yell at me. In fact, I think he appreciated that I let him just yell and vent and shut up, because by the end of the yelling, he actually wasn't mad anymore.
So he worked it out himself.
It was like a flame burning itself out.
Yeah.
And so now I was like, you know, I'm going to use this every single time someone gets ticked off at me. And I do try to tick everybody off, but I don't try to tick my clients. I mean, I'm known for that. Okay. In the industry, but I don't try to tick my clients off. Right. Mm-hmm. Because you know, that's a little bit counterproductive, but it does happen sometimes. And so when it does happen, you see, in the past I've gotten all like, and I kind of barf on them, but no more barfing in this case. I'm just going to shut up like I did yesterday. I found the answer to that.
Well, I think you're onto something. It's kind of funny. It's kind of timely. I had George Kinder on my Stay Wealthy podcast yesterday. And George Kinder, for those who don't know, is the father of life planning. He created the life planning process. And he always suggests that we should start out every single meeting with the question, why are you here today and what do you want to accomplish? And then just shut up and let them talk. And as they talk, if they stop talking, then you say, is there anything else you'd like to share? So you'd have a blank piece of paper and a pen and you ask that question and the follow-up. And it's just amazing how much you'll learn from somebody. So when I had him on the podcast yesterday, that's how I started the podcast. I said, George, welcome to the show. Why are you here today and what do you want to accomplish? And he just started cracking up. So I think you're onto something. It's something that I've implemented in my practice as well. And it's worked very well for us.
The shutting up tactic.
Yeah, in fact, so we kind of break it up into two meetings. So our first meeting, our first hour of meeting with a potential client is us shutting up the entire time. So we spend an hour just shutting up. And all I do is ask questions and take notes and ask questions and take notes. And then the next meeting is, you know, gives me time to think about everything that they said and figure out how I'm going to answer all of their questions. And then the next meeting is me answering all of their questions and kind of going in for the ask. And so we just break it up into those two meetings and that works really well.
So you had also told me about an experiment that you did, I think, way back when you first started your practice with digital SEO, I think, right?
Correct.
Can you tell me about that experiment and the result?
Sure. So yeah, I mean, I started my firm in 2014. I was essentially nobody here in San Diego. And so I quickly just tried to think of ways that I could get visibility in the community. So I focused on some hyper local kind of SEO type strategies, nothing crazy, just kind of the simple basic SEO type stuff. And I targeted the keywords San Diego Financial Advisor, San Diego Financial Planner, you know, every iteration of those two phrases. And I just did a lot of work on the SEO side and putting out really good content, and web traffic started to grow and get to our website. And that's when it hit me. I thought, you know, I should be able to convert these this web traffic into leads, into potential clients for the firm. And so, you know, we had to create a landing page and a process for those prospects to go through and integrate some technology to make it really easy for them to schedule phone calls with us. So, you know, there's a few things that we had to do, but ultimately in 2017, so 3 years later, were ranking on the first page of Google for all of those local keywords. And we had over 100 people schedule introductory phone calls with me just through our website. So I did absolutely nothing. And these phone calls would just get scheduled. So it was successful, but I also learned a lot too. What I learned is, you know, I'm not a good fit for everybody. And out of those, you know, 100 and something phone calls, I'd say maybe a third were actually a good fit. So, you know, some might say it was successful, but I'd say, you know what, we really needed to fine tune that a little bit more and get clear about who we do our best work with, you know, and just kind of build out that landing page. So then in 2018, I think those numbers got cut in half. And 2019, gosh, if I have 20 to 30 that get scheduled through our website, I'm happy, because those are going to be super high quality, you know, screened prospective clients that should be a really good fit for us. So I'm not wasting their time and I'm not wasting my team's time.
Did you change anything else?
Did I change anything else? I think like most of the energy was put into, well, I guess first thing first, you know, there's a big call to action on my website that says start here. And there's just some, I always say there's something magical about these words, start here. So the start here button kind of follows people around through our website. And I know just through the analytics that it's the most clicked button on our website. So people love to click this button, start here. The problem is with most websites is people have this start here button and then it doesn't go anywhere. It goes to like a contact form or it goes to just a really boring internal page. Well, if you click our start here button, it goes to a really detailed landing page that pretty much answers all the questions anybody might have about working with our firm. And then it has a nice big call to action on that page that allows them to take the first step and schedule a phone call with us. So adding that start here button and then building a really good landing page that makes it really, really clear, injecting that scheduling technology, we use Acuity Scheduling, into that landing page, I think that was just a great formula. So again, we've just gotten more and more clear about who we work with. We've got an FAQ on there now answering some common questions. And again, if somebody schedules a phone call with us through our site today, there's a pretty close match. Like, we've gotten really good at screening people through the website. Mm-hmm.
But so 20 people coming in is, I would say, just, I mean, if you're saying like a third of the 100 originally in the original experiment, the one third of it, like 30 people, whatever. So that's, I mean, have you just cut out the people that didn't fit? Is every lead that comes in a good fit? Or is it just that you're, I mean, or do you have any like kind of not misfits in there?
I mean, every single phone call I have, I take diligent notes and I think, okay, what went well? What didn't go well? How could I improve? How can I improve the messaging on the website? Was there any confusion? And I go back to the website and I iterate and I improve. And so we've just done that, you know, every single day for the last several years. And again, like if you go on our landing page, if you click on that start here button, and it's really crystal clear who we work with and what we do and who we don't work with and what we don't do. So again, the you know, the 30 or 40 that schedule a phone call with me this year, it's going to be a pretty close match. At that point, it's really just, is there a personality fit or not? They might be interviewing other advisors and maybe they like, you know, the person next door a little bit better than me, and that's fine. But yeah, we've just gotten really clear about who we do our best work with. I mean, we strictly work with retirees over the age of 50 and we have $1 million minimum. So if you don't fit into that little box, then we're probably just not the best fit.
Right. Okay. So in general, what advice can you give people about running an advisor marketing experiment on their own?
Well, I go back to this, like, pick one thing. We kind of started off with that in the very beginning, but I think it's really easy to be distracted. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're on Twitter or LinkedIn, you watch all these advisors, you watch yourself doing all these, you know, different things and publishing YouTube videos. And it's really easy to kind of have FOMO, that fear of missing out. And it's really easy to get distracted by all these shiny objects. And so I would encourage people to advisors to choose one thing. Like, what do you, do you really, really, really enjoy writing and are you really good at it? Then perhaps you should start a blog and start to put out high quality content. Don't start a podcast just because everyone else seems to have a podcast. If you hate talking into a microphone and you're not that good at it, then maybe you shouldn't be doing podcasting. So I go back to like this, choose this one thing and do it really, really well and master it and then move on to the next thing. So the same goes for social media. Like everyone needs to have a social media presence, but you don't need to be on Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter. You don't need to do all of them. Like pick one platform that your target demographic lives on and is active on and master that platform and ignore everything else. And then once you've mastered it, then you can move to the next thing. But I just see advisors trying to do too much, try to reach too many people, and you just can't do everything really well.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. What I think is important in marketing, in addition to this focus element that you're saying, which I agree with, to some extent, I think sometimes people can be a little bit closed-minded about things. Like, how many times am I going to hear people say you can't find retired people on YouTube? It's like I had a client just get a lead today from YouTube. I've had other clients get leads from YouTube. People still believe, no, the 60-year-olds are not watching YouTube. They are. They just weren't watching your video, you know? So sometimes people can be a little closed-minded about that. But anyways, one other thing, though, that I would add to this about financial advisor marketing experiments is that have a limit on how far it goes. For example, I liked that you said that you were going to just do four pieces and that you had a strategy to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you'll know at the end whether or not it worked. However, I get these messages from people, like one of my clients, you know, I taught him how to do like LinkedIn messaging. And then I get this email and I'm like, how did the last week go? And he's like, well, I sent out 110 LinkedIn messages and I got like one positive response back. And I'm like, how did that happen? You know, there should have been like after like the third day or after you send out like message number 30 and you don't have a response back, then I think naturally you should kind of just say, stop. What am I doing wrong? So I'm all for kind of like tweaking the experiment, or if that means that you made too many, like, I guess, you know, control group, variable group, right? Like if you can only have one variable, then maybe you have to start over and do a new experiment. But I am not all for doing experiments that you know like halfway through or even sooner that it's not working. Like in my opinion, don't carry out the experiment that you know it's when you know it's not working.
Yeah, and I just want to say one thing. You know, you mentioned YouTube and finding retirees on YouTube, and I totally agree with you. But in addition to paying attention to your campaign and if the campaign's working and pivoting, pay attention to how you feel. Like, I would not feel like LinkedIn messaging doesn't excite me. It's not something that I want to do, but that doesn't mean it won't work for somebody else. Like YouTube just doesn't interest me. I don't like being on camera. I'm not good on camera. I don't like the way I look on camera. Like I just don't like it. So pay attention. Like if you're trying YouTube and trying to reach people on YouTube and it just doesn't feel authentic to you and you're just not that good at it, like maybe you just need to pick a different platform. So I would pay attention to one, yeah, is the campaign working? Do you need to make changes? But two, do you like this and are you good at it? Because there's a gazillion, you know, things that you could do for marketing, from snail mail to YouTube to podcasting to writing, you know, handwritten letters, like whatever it might be. So I would just urge people to pay attention to how you feel doing this stuff as well. It needs to be authentic. It absolutely needs to be authentic in order to work. And you can be authentic with LinkedIn messaging. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's about finding the match, as they always say.
Yeah, finding the match, you know, having a plan, being consistent, again, being authentic, making sure it's something that you enjoy doing and you're good at. And God, if you put your head down and just do the right thing, the results will come. But if you try to force something, I'm in the camp that says it's probably not going to work. Even if Sarah does it really, really well and has success, doesn't mean I'm necessarily going to have success.
Right. All right, Taylor. So I'm going to wrap here. Thank you so much. You were a great guest. Everybody, please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. And I will have Taylor's information in the show notes.
Thanks, Sarah. Had a blast. Appreciate you having me.
All right, you bet.